Okay, hi everybody, and good morning to you this fine Friday the 26th. I should have been here on Wednesday the 24th. I will be next week. But sometimes, you know, you tell yourself certain things and a pattern gets set in your mind. And I said, oh, how wonderful. I don't have anything until the night. And I had overlooked my necessary presence, but you were all very kind, and I hope it didn't waste a lot of your time. Things are well. It's quite a section we're going to be going through today, and that was intended for last Wednesday. But we will meet Wednesday in the evening next time, and that will be the 31st in the evening, still of July, and then on the next day, we will have Mercury going direct. As far as blaming it all on retrograde Mercury, well, it's convenient, but not accurate. Okay, let's have, anyway, happy to see you all here, and we'll add as we go. You know, these morning sessions are a little bit tough on the United States and South America, and maybe on the eastern, rather the western part of the U.S., some people can join us, as I see, is happening. Well, the Tibetan has given us a huge material, and I sometimes say, well, look, the next 6 years are the years for assimilation. Well, we haven't really assimilated too much up to this point, even though we've studied hard. So I would say that even as he starts to write his third installment, the assimilation must continue of this work with Alice Bailey, and I would say also, who's going to say they've assimilated The Secret Doctrine and certain other works by HPB? So it's a triple presentation. And in order to have a rounded out view, we have to continue absorbing what we can and then applying it the best we can, oftentimes in thought and by esoteric methods, but oftentimes in conversation. And you never can tell when you'll have the opportunity to offer some kind of new insight. I remember I was once in Mary Bailey's apartment, and she knew I was interested in Masonry, so she had some old Masonic books that she wanted to give to me, and she did. And of course, I've ever since given them to the AUM Masonic group. And a man came to the door, and I noticed that she was saying something esoteric to him, and he was a delivery fellow, and when he left, she shut the door and turned around, and she said, "Always plant a seed." I thought to myself, well, okay, that's really the teaching in action. She lived to be a ripe old age, you know, 90 years old, and a powerful first-ray disciple under whom it was a great instruction to work. So let's have a little bit of a alignment here, because what we're trying to do is to understand the structure. The middle structure, you might say, squares on the bottom, circles on the top, and triangles in the middle. We're trying to understand this middle structure, oftentimes the symbol for the soul. Sometimes souls are called triangles, and we're trying to find a way to infuse the pattern of squares, found in the undeveloped human being and found in the etheric body of the undeveloped human being and found also in the etheric body of the still non-sacred planet. So we're looking at a huge picture. And the Tibetan, of course, he says, look, I can't really present this to you the way it is. It's too vast, and there's no time, but you get the idea. So he presents some of the triangles, which can be considered useful, but they're all useful, because when you have the group consciousness of those higher entities, they are all interactive and all giving and receiving, all sharing, some kind of mutual participation, cooperation, attention. So we haven't really the slightest about all of them, but a few we'll know something about. And when he draws attention to one or two, we get the idea of how we may do that. When we attend to those triangles that are not given. I think I once tried to do that long ago. I think I mentioned every triangle and tried to, of the zodiac and also of the of planets. And I started to revolve them as well and put each in a superior, a secondary, and a tertiary position. How far I got and whether it was a labor of futility, I can't remember. I think I completed, but it certainly was a labor of futility, but I learned something. And I would take my tape recorder out into the woods and be gone for 6 or 7 hours just talking into it, thinking about how those things all fit together. Well, when we try to attack the meaning of a systemic or cosmic triangle, you know, maybe we'll know how just a little bit to approach that. Okay, so just saying hi to you and welcoming to you, Anne and Anne Veronica and Anna P, Papadaki, and Anne, lots of Anne's here today, and Summer, Annette, Antoinette, wow. Catherine, Frederick, Gretchen, Ishtar, Karen, Catherine again, O'Brien, and Kim, Lona, Mariana, Martha, Mary, Nienka, Risto, Tia, Walter, Zenaide, and Joe is helping me on the staff side. Probably relieved that after all I did show up this time. I think I was looking at the clock all night, you know, just to make sure that I would be there. One doesn't like to miss an appointment. And let's see, various things. Okay. Yeah, well, thank you, everybody. I'm grateful to you for being here for this possible learning experience. And let's see where we are here. Yeah. All right. This is where we appear to be. Is this it? No. We have to go a little bit farther. And here it is. Yep, okay. That big 26 tells the story. And what we've been doing is looking at this great triangle, for which we might, when we deal with Sirius, substitute the little bear, because the blind is there, the Father and the Son, you know. So Sirius is the cosmic Christ, and the Christ is the Son of God, you know, in the conventional language. But then so is the little bear in relation to the great bear. So he does once mention this profound triangle, I think only once. But you get the idea that when you see Sirius, it can well be a blind, an occult blind for the little bear. And we've talked about the average individual beginning to aspire and approach the first initiation. And we've talked about the disciple learning something about mental focus under Gemini and Sagittarius and Mercury, with the Pleiades having such a strong mental aspect, but also a great love aspect, which may not be suspected. The Pleiades are associated with cosmic Buddhi, and not just cosmic mentality, and that's and with somehow nourishing the solar angels. That's one of those things, you know, a little bit obscure, but if you read it, you can find that it is so. And then also, they kind of have a very centralized first ray meaning for us, because they're the very hub of the wheel around which our solar system and the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, are revolving, and other things too, I suppose. I talked to some astronomers. They said, well, that just can't be, you know. I mean, because something about the magnetism and the distance and all the rest of it. But occultism and DK seems to say that it is so. So we can suspend our judgment and look for confirmation as we go. When we look at Gemini and Sagittarius, we have two signs which are really instrumental in the individualization of animal man. At that time, Sagittarius was the animal, Gemini was the angel, and the result was Mercury, Ray 4, the human being. So we see in that zodiacal planetary triangle constellations that really help the human race get started on this planet. Now, you know, there are humanities on the various planets, and DK discusses them near the end, I think, of Esoteric Astrology. And it's quite interesting, the kinds of lives that are found there and the duties of those lives. And also, he deals not with certain of the planets, because he just says it's too esoteric and I'm not allowed to reveal this. And then, of course, there's the Great Bear, and a lot to do with Vulcan and with Uranus, I would say. The Uranus is a major first-ray planet. Aries is the major first-ray constellation of the zodiac. The Sun is veiling Uranus in one respect. Here it's also veiling Vulcan. And Libra, you know, law, sex, and money, it has its first-ray component, and Uranus is the esoteric ruler. So there's a lot of the first-ray coming through this triangle from the Great Bear. And as the rheologist Stephen Pugh has called it, he calls it the cosmic Manu, which I think is a really good appellation. He's done a lot of pioneering work, and, you know, it takes everybody pitching in to try to advance this great subject. So here we have a cosmic triangle, a superior of superior constellations working through our zodiacal triangles. And we have here, interesting, it's kind of the first two decanates of the age of Aquarius. Saturn first, Mercury next, and then, well, it'll be Venus and not Vulcan. But there will be a great illumination representing the Sun at the end of the age of Aquarius. Now, what I would suggest, you know, take notes, see what might be of interest to you. It's a vast field of interest, of course. But anyway, maybe specific things might be of interest to you. And then when we have our discussion, we'll go on. The suggestion was offered to me, couldn't I just do the meditation first and then get into all this explanatory stuff? But I think we need to do it in the order that we are working, so that our meditation will be, let's say, enriched by what we encounter. All right, so we have these really a threefold process, and it says it can be covered by the three words: sensitivity, illumination, and inspiration. Well, Sirius is the brilliant star of sensitivity. It's many other things as well, but that's one of its names. You know, it's also the home of the law of karma, the fourth or intermediary law of karma. And it is the home of the law of freedom. Amazing star, and yet it's a relatively considered, it's a dwarf star, and probably not all that advanced when looking at the relativity of the universe, but compared to our local group of suns, it's very advanced. So, sensitivity found in the first triangle with Sirius. And I guess we might say it is the sensitization of the normal personal human being to the higher of the pairs of opposites, which makes it possible to begin treading the spiritual path. Something else is, coming into orbit there and making it possible to live a higher and wider life. When it comes to the Pleiades, the factor is illumination. Mercury is the great bestower of illumination, along with Venus. It's said about Mercury, receives seven times more occult light than the Earth does, and Venus receives three times more. And Mercury is much older and has a lot more to do with the previous solar system than Venus does, but it's certainly a great source of illumination. And in one point, Scorpio, which has so much to do with darkness, is said to be ruling the phase of illumination in the meditative sequence. And we know that Mercury is the most powerful hierarchical ruler in Scorpio. You know how it goes: Leo, concentration; Virgo, meditation; Libra, contemplation; Scorpio, illumination; Sagittarius, inspiration; Capricorn, initiation; and Pisces, identification. I couldn't find an I word for Aquarius, so I just called it universalization. Okay. So inspiration is related to the spirit, or the first aspect, and it's related to the sun. Breathing in of the spirit, the breath of life, and with the cosmic ether. So basically, it's a first-ray factor that the Great Bear is concerned with. Regardless of what its rays may be, the Great Bear and all of its triangles rules the first-ray aspect of the seven rays. The Little Bear rules the second ray aspect, and the Pleiades rules the third ray aspect of the seven rays. Put them all together, you get 21, and then take the entirety as a unit, and you get the magical number 22. So 21 really equals 22 in this case, and these three great sources provide us with what it takes for a human being to grow spiritually: sensitivity, then the light, illumination, then the inspiration, the breathing in of the spirit. You breathe in a god, you breathe in the god you are, you breathe in the monad, you are inspired, the inner fire descends and animates you, and you are inspired from on high. another group of energies. Okay, now so he's off these eight. How many are there here? One, two. Okay, there are six constellational energies, and we're going to talk about four more. And we're talking here about planets, which are also instrumental in fulfilling karma, illuminating the human being, and giving the ascent of the spirit, which is symbolized by the sun. Another group of energies can be touched upon, just touched upon, so we have to be humble here, because he says, any true elucidation is not really possible. It's not possible. They concern the focused energies of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Now, you know, in my own view, and that of some of the other students of esoteric astrology, these are nearby suns. You know, more or less, they are maybe single suns or double suns, but they are not really constellations. Some theorists think that we're referencing great constellations in the one about whom naught may be said, but I have determined, for myself at least, that such stars as Procyon, Altair, maybe Fomalo, Alpha and Beta Centauri are our particular sun. I don't know if I've named all seven yet, but well, Sirius, I'd have to name Sirius, I think. It's only 8 light years away. That those are parts of what we might call the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, and who is operating through such seven solar systems would be a being we call a cosmic logos. Now, if you want a good little map here, you would, I tell you what, I better make this a little bigger because it's just too small. Okay. Okay, every once in a while there'll be one of those sounds. And if we go to Cosmic Fire, and go to, gosh, I hope I got it right, 293 or something like that. Yep, that's it. When we, the next step, when we leave our solar system, for whom planetary schemes are chakras, we go into a being called a cosmic logos, for whom solar systems are chakras. So, in fact, the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, and in which our solar system plays the part of a heart center, is informed by a cosmic logos. That's not really quite the one about whom naught may be said as we normally discuss that being, although sometimes there's like two ones about whom, well, there's just so many. The galaxy and everything, the whole universe is the one about whom naught may be said, in a way. But let's just say when we start adding these other stars and the sun along with it, making seven solar systems, that combination is informed by a very high being about whom we know practically nothing, and it's called a cosmic logos. And then we go on beyond that to what for our purposes is called the unknown, and there, not just solar systems, but constellations are the chakras. So cosmic logoi are the centers of force. So DK certainly has expanded this point of view tremendously. And if you look at this carefully, you'll see that this little green triangle is what I would call the unknown, or the our local one about whom naught may be said. Notice how many triangular representations there are in this mega map. And of course, everything beyond this triangle is also, in a way, a one about whom naught may be said. So an occasional hint is dropped about these great cosmic beings in whom we live and move and have our being. So we can't really elucidate this, and we're talking about the focused energies of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. These energies, six in number, reach our solar system via the constellations Taurus and Scorpio and the planet Mars. Well, you know, we can see the relationship of these three sources. Mars is the orthodox and esoteric ruler of Scorpio, and it is in detriment, putting up quite a struggle in Taurus. There's a lot of sixth ray, a lot of conflict in this particular combination of Taurus, Scorpio, and the planet Mars. And we get the idea that when it comes to our particular cosmic logos, in whom we are a heart center, a lot of conflict is occurring. Now, where will we find conflict occurring? I think in the solar plexus and the sacral center particularly. I haven't quite made up my mind where it belongs. Sometimes I think that logos, cosmic logos, is the solar plexus of the one about whom naught may be said, and sometimes I think it's the sacral center of the one about whom naught may be said. Let's see what little it does tell us. Now, you know, obviously, it's possible to triangulate between all of these suns that are in the seven solar systems, and then one can start triangulating between the constellational chakras within the one about whom naught may be said. You know, I might be able to, let's say, I might be able to make a triangle between, well, I wouldn't make it, I just notice it, between the Great Bear, the Little Bear, and the constellation Orion. Huge constellations, very powerful, and yet a triangle would exist. And then, of course, I could go on and on and on until I reach the realm of circles. Now, I think that any highly developed being in cosmos will eventually have an etheric body made of interlocking spheres or circles, just the way our solar logos does. So we're kind of asking ourselves here, does this these six systems, you know, including our own, working through Taurus, Scorpio, Mars, just what kind of chakra is that? Well, the problem is Mars, because Mars is such a powerful non-sacred planet that everything that goes below the diaphragm is in a way ruled by Mars. Mars rules Kundalini latent, as it is said. Mars rules the sacral center. You know, it from one perspective, also Uranus, but earlier Mars. And Mars certainly rules the solar plexus center of a human being. So right there is a triangle of the personality, the solar plexus, the sacral center, and the base of the spine. And Mars is involved in all of them. Now, when you look at Taurus and Scorpio, the factor of desire is very strong. But they are both, in a way, related to the sacral center. I think we can see, because they both have so much to do with the general sex impulse and with the pairs of opposites which the sex impulse is supposed to bring together. And you may notice that at the present time, Taurus is ruled by the fourth ray. And even more prominently, and as the major sign distributing the fourth ray, we have Scorpio. So where shall we place this? In the realm of desire or in the realm of the production of form? I've been working with it as kind of a solar plexus myself, and looking for a different kind of constellation when it comes to the sacral center. But I'm not quite sure, not quite sure. And I keep my options open. Their peculiar nature, objective in evolution and basic purpose, is only revealed to initiates above the fifth initiation. So if you've taken the fifth initiation, I don't know whether you have to have taken the sixth and be a Chohan, you are entitled to a full explanation of this information. Meanwhile, he just offers us a kind of a hint. I don't know if you've ever gone out under the night sky. I'm sure you have, and you know, identified various constellations and tried to attune with them. Now, even if it's very bright outside, you can do it because the phone apps make it very easy. All you have to do is point your phone in the direction of an invisible constellation. Invisible because of the light of day or because the earth itself is blocking your sight of the constellation, and it will appear. So I think that kind of attunement is maybe a way that we can work to find out which it is. I've sometimes looked at the constellation of the Centaur, which is quite a large constellation in the southern sky, and I've wondered whether it doesn't have a lot to do with the sacral center of the one about whom naught may be said. Here we have, you know, just a little local cosmos system surrounding, you know, not surrounding our solar system, and we're not even sure how to connect all of the different factors that are at play here. But increasingly we will, and when we begin to think of larger spheres of activity, we can understand why it is we know so little, and in fact that the masters themselves don't know so much about these things and are learning as they go. So if we're initiates above the fifth initiation, then it can be revealed what is the true nature of these six solar systems. When it comes to Sirius and the Little Bear, one gets the sense that we're dealing with kind of an agnus center. When it comes to the Great Bear, we're definitely dealing with seven interior head centers in the one about whom not may be said. When we're dealing with the Pleiades, we're probably dealing with the thousand-petaled lotus of the one about whom not may be said, and it's been suggested that the constellation Orion has a lot to do with the heart center of this great logos. It's got seven first magnitude stars, and they just blaze away, and each one of them has a particular ray, and very interestingly, a certain second ray star within them having to do with the heart center, because the heart center is the fourth, and this particular star called Betelgeuse or Betelgeuse is the fourth center, the heart center, a huge supergiant star. It's got a lot of second ray in it, and it is coming into activity in relation to the earth. There's so much going on. You would think that humanity would want to be rid of these infantile preoccupations and get on with the real business of living in the solar system and living in the local cosmos and understanding the subjectivity of the life process. But we seem to get caught up in our Leonian ego and can't go much farther. Anyway, above the fifth, they are concerned with the problem of desire, which is to humanity a problem, but not in its higher octaves. Master Moria says, who can be rid of desire? Desire with a big D. You have to choose and co-measure your desires so they are not desires for the phenomenal worlds, which the Buddha tried to warn us away from. So they're concerned with the problem of desire and with the transmutation of spiritual into spiritual will and divine purpose, I suppose, of desire. So when I read this, I keep on thinking, that's not it. Okay, here we are. I just want to get this straight if I can. Make it a little bit purple so that we know where we're going. This suggests to me that our solar system is a solar plexus in the one about whom naught may be said, and not so much a sacral center. But you know, the solar plexus and sacral center are so connected, and just the way there are fears in the solar plexus center, DK tells us when reviewing the life of RSW, who had a lot of Scorpio, says ancient fears and desires are located in the sacral center, not just the solar plexus. So they're closely interrelated. Okay. Now, with respect to this solar system and the battle along the fourth ray line and sixth ray line, they are the originators of conflict, are closely connected with the fourth ray of harmony through conflict, as I've been stating, and are therefore in a peculiar relation to the fourth creative hierarchy, the human, and to our Earth in this fourth round. And that makes a lot of sense. If you think about it, let's see if I can get at it from here. I don't think I can. I think I have to go over here. Okay. And I will try to do that. And you'll notice that when it comes to the Buddhic plane, it's ruled by Scorpio. And our particular hierarchy of monads, which is called the initiates or lords of sacrifice, now that's so Scorpionic, we're focused on this Buddhic plane in terms of our area of expression. Our monads are higher, yes, but our area of expression is the Buddhic plane, ruled by Mercury, connected with the color yellow, connected with the word which Mercury rules, the tongue and speech, connected with mantrams, mantrika shakti, and the home of the solar angels and Agnishvatas. Sometimes considered the same, but the Agnishvatas are perhaps lesser solar angels. There are all these categories of solar angels, just the way there are categories of man. All right, lots to learn here. Now, you know, I had the hope that I would, I'll go on just a little bit, but I'm only going to do maybe half as much as I thought I would. That's the way it goes. Okay. In these eight constellations, now let's see, I'm trying to figure out what are the eight, because we have six above, and four more to be added. Aha, right, there it is. Taurus and Scorpio have been added. Okay, so we have the aspirant, Cancer, Capricorn, Saturn. We have the disciple, Gemini, Sagittarius, Mercury. We have the initiate, Aries, Libra, and the Sun, with the Sun standing for who knows what, you know, not just itself. And then we have the two constellations connected with the seven solar systems, and they are Taurus and Scorpio. And if you look at page 50 of Esoteric Astrology, you'll see a very interesting thing. I'm going to go here. Sorry for those occasional bursts of sound. We have dynamic energy, and those are the top three. And then magnetic energy, more in relation to the soul. But both, there's magnetism in the solar plexus, and there is magnetism in the sacral center. But let's just say that Taurus and Scorpio are particularly connected with the distribution of solar fire rather than electric fire. And this gets into some higher things, which I've covered haltingly, I guess you might say, in my commentary on A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. You know, the first 1,000 or more pages are done in a written manner, and therefore quite precise, and found on Makara, and the last 100 or two pages are done in a verbal way. Maybe the precision of thought is not quite so great, but the spontaneity is more there. Anyway, this has to do with solar fire and attraction. Again, I think the kind of attraction that's being referenced is that of the solar plexus. That's my impression. If I look at the third creative hierarchy, what do I see? Something, I hope. Oh, yes, here's what I have to do. Make it smaller. Third creative hierarchy. Here it is. It has to do with light. Light through knowledge. But it's interesting that you would think Scorpio would be the sign of utter darkness, but in the meditative sequence, it rules illumination. So you have to study these things from many, many different angles. Anyway, in these eight constellations are to be found the influences which are mainly concerned with the evolution of the soul in the solar system, in the planet Earth, and in man. Now notice, and you do remember, that the number eight is a number particularly associated with the Christ consciousness and with the Christ. So these eight constellations are called the eight potencies of the Christ. Notice how it's possible to keep on seeing the 12 constellations in different groupings. The Tibetan is particularly good at this, and we're going to have to remember how he divides them up. These are the eight potencies of the Christ. They govern, what do they govern? Psychic unfoldment of the life in all forms, and they are of the utmost significance to the aspirant. So I'm just wondering, are Leo, Virgo, Aquarius, and Pisces not? Because the next thing we're going to take up are these remaining four constellations. Now, let's always try to remember the perspective from which we are viewing these constellations. We have another triangle coming up, a basic and powerful triangle. It goes Leo, Virgo, Pisces, and we'll deal with that the next time. You know, and if I were to ask you right away, you know, what do you see in Leo, Virgo, Pisces? Well, certainly you see an opposition. You see a lot of second-ray work evoking the soul. And we have to remember that although Leo is a first-ray sign and fifth-ray, that it's the second fire sign, which automatically connects it with consciousness. Okay, well, I was certainly ambitious, and I thought somehow we were going to get to do all this, but I think it's better not to stretch it too far. So this means, okay, these are vast subjects. Okay, and we just have to go slowly. All right. That's it. So that's as far as we're going to go. Right now, 467. Oh, golly. I keep on thinking we're going to make more than one page. I thought we would make five pages today, but I have to be careful not to throw too much into the hopper. Okay, these four come next. So we have Aries, Libra. We have Gemini, Sagittarius. We have Cancer, Capricorn, and we have Taurus, Scorpio. So basically, you know, if you look at the beginning signs of the zodiac, we have Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and Cancer, and the opposite signs. Okay. All right, so let's put on our thinking caps now, and maybe something has occurred to you, and if it hasn't occurred to you, then general occultism is a fair subject, because everything leads to everything else, and everything is related to everything else, and we can probably find a way to relate whatever is proposed to the subject in hand. What is the subject in hand? A very great cosmic triangle that are called the three great constellations, how it enters our solar system via certain of the zodiacal constellations, which are really some of 12 parts in a magnificent, huge head center for the one about whom naught may be said. And what is the priority of these energies? How do they descend? Are they available to us? What do we have to do to make them available, especially at the time of the full moon? We want to understand more deeply. Okay, so that's that. And either write your question or your statement in the question box, or just ask it with your voice. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Your thoughts. I know, you know, this is such a... This is his most occult book. He said so because it deals entirely with energies. So we have to learn how to think in a new way. We have to learn how to be sensitive, illumined, and inspired. Those are the three results of Sirius Little Bear, Pleiades, and Great Bear. Sensitive, illumined, and inspired. Mental discussion is good, but to actually come directly in touch with the energy itself and to feel the energy and the difference between energies, that's when it really starts to get real. Okay. So let's see, some things are from before. And is there anything anybody would like to say or to ask? And if there's nothing on the subject, then you can ask anything on occultism, and I try to respond in a way that will not be entirely stupid. We can do it that way too. Okay, anybody? Okay. Okay, and by the way, I want to say, do you have to learn astrology? Well, you have to learn a certain amount of occult astrology. Alice Bailey herself was not an astrologer. They had a man there who was an astrologer. He worked in the headquarters. Wait.
Ishtar has her hand up.
Okay.
Oh, hi. I'm Michael.
Ishtar.
Sorry, a bit slow on trying to type the question. I just wanted to know, does Fohat descend from the Great Bear?
My impression is that Fohat is an utterly cosmic blend of the first of the highest three aspects of energy, and
yes,
that the Great Bear itself is relatively low down on the totem pole here, and that Fohat exists all the way up to the universal logos. Now, however, I will say that in terms of our local context, this type of cosmic electricity is related, yes, to the personality of the solar logos. Now let's look at a map.
Yes.
The personality of the solar logos. Okay. Where do we find that? Now, fortunately, there are some little maps here. And let's see if I can. Well, I'm going to do it this way then. 2, 3. There it is. Okay. Now, this is one of those sneaky little blinds. The personality of the solar logos that is associated with Agni and with Fohat begins in the middle part of the cosmic mental plane.
Uh-huh.
The Great Bear itself, however, though shown on the cosmic Buddhic plane, is really the home of the seven major Pleiades, and the blank atmic plane here is the home of the Great Bear. So there,
oh,
okay, 11, page 1162. Of cosmic fire. I believe that's it, where it tells us, 1162, that cosmic Buddhi comes from the Pleiades. Now, that's what we're looking at here, is cosmic Buddhi. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and that there is a plane to which the Great Bear belongs. Now, I don't remember the quote exactly, but I'll, kind of look for it here just a little bit. And let's see what we got here. Treatise on, and I hope I'm correct about that. Okay. Here it is. The energy centers of the solar logos are themselves in the form of vast lotuses or wheels, I guess those are planetary schemes, at the center of which lies hidden that planetary cosmic life we call a planetary logos. Now, note, he is the meeting place for two types of force, spiritual or logoic, which he receives via the logoic lotus on cosmic mental planes. For instance, our egoic lotus for our solar system is found on the first level, first cosmic level, first cosmic subplane of the cosmic mental plane. And so that's our solar logos on that one. Now our Earth is on the third level, and the sacred planets are on the second level. Okay, so
I see.
So here we have a planetary logos, who is a meeting place for force, spiritual or logoic, which reaches him via the lotus of our sun, from now notice this blind, from the seven rishis of the Great Bear on their own plane, and secondly, of Buddhic force, which is transmitted via the seven sisters or Pleiades from a constellation called the Dragon in some books, and from which has come the appellation Dragon of Wisdom. So cosmic Buddhi relates to the Pleiades, and cosmic Atma of will relates to, in my estimation, the Great Bear, their own plane. However, you know, if you have something above, it always descends below. So in other words, whatever is here, and notice it's blank, he's not showing us, it descends onto the cosmic Buddhi plane. So the normal Fohat that we consider is lower, yes, lower than this. However, in the next level, this entire thing has to be considered an etheric physical plane with two such large diagrams superior to it, and there's going to be a greater type of cosmic electricity descending. And it's going to be eventually 10 dimensions in cosmos, and they're all higher instantiations of Fohat. So, you know.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Is that related to the central spiritual sun?
Well, now it depends on what you want to call that. The monad is the central spiritual sun of man. The monad of a planetary logos or solar logos is its central spiritual sun. Now we want to take that term. It always means the monadic nature of something. Okay?
Right.
Now what it turns out is the galaxy itself is a central spiritual sun. And we can go beyond that and find ever higher instantiations of a central spiritual sun. So it is a generic term.
I see. So I was meaning the central spiritual sun in the physical sense of this galaxy, Milky Way.
Okay, now let me think about that. You see, the whole galaxy itself, what we're talking about is the monadic nature of a galactic logos, and that's so far up the scale that no charts are drawn for it. But it always means a great unknown. For instance, look, you see, here we're trying to go in touch with our soul nature, which is the solar sun, you might say. We're trying to come in touch with solar fire just as a little human being. But now, gradually, we make our way into our monadic nature, the central spiritual sun. Now, those central spiritual suns are found here, down here on the cosmic physical plane. But if we go to still higher beings, it will be found on the cosmic monadic plane. and you'll have to take apart all these little triangles and differentiate them, and you will find the central spiritual monadic sun for various of the entities, like solar logoi, planetary logoi, and so forth. So, see, always watch out for a generic term, because we tend to think it's this when it can be applied at many different levels. Now, our main concern, let's get in touch with the monad, building the Antikarana. Let's take the third, fourth, and fifth initiation one fine day, and we'll be in touch with our central spiritual sun. And eventually, you know, when the solar angels leave us after the fourth degree, some of them venture to the heart of the sun of our solar logos, and some of them venture to the monadic level of the central spiritual sun of our solar logos, which is not found here. This is his causal. Yes. This is his causal body. See, our it's going to be found up here in this little green triangle. If you take that triangle apart quite a bit, you got to, you know, get into it, analyze it, get all the different levels. That's where you're going to find the central spiritual sun of our soul.
Amazing. And that chart is in which book?
Cosmic Fire. But of course, here it's colored too. You colored it. And there's some other varieties of this, but I think she was really quite accurate. And you see, here's one less colored. And you'll find that on page 344 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. But there it doesn't look quite as nice, you know.
That one's a nice one.
Yeah, this is, it's nice to have the real thing. Okay, and a matter of fact, here I'll show you what I mean, if I can do this properly. If I can do this properly, 344. There it is. The evolution of a solar logos, but be careful. Solar logos is a generic term. Once again, there it is. See what I mean? So that's how they did it in the old days, and we tried to make it. We tried to make it there, but our solar system comes out of this triangle, and so does the solar system of the Great Bear, and so does the solar system of the Pleiades, and so, you know, many things come out of that little triangle, and he's by no means, he has not broken them down by any means, so we have to infer. We have to infer. Yeah.
Okay. Quite incredible.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Big trip. It's a big trip. Okay, Ishtar. Thank you. Thank you for the question.
Or the thank
thought. You. Yep. Thank you. Okay, your thoughts, friends. I can be on anything. You know what I mean? I know this material is difficult, but obviously, you know, we're not going to make excuses for ourselves. We're going to study it until we get it. And then we'll find out that he will unfold still more, you know. And, yeah, I mean, we are right now getting the ABCs of the Ageless Wisdom, just the ABCs. And people think Alice Bailey is too difficult, and it is too difficult for some if they don't really want to apply themselves. But, you know, when you have spiritual nourishment of the highest caliber, you might as well go for it, you know, rather than settle for other things. Now, that doesn't mean there's not a place for the people who go into the Bailey work and then kind of write it down a little bit so that it can be appreciated by more people. But I'm assuming that, you know, very sincere students of Bailey and the Tibetan will want to just really, really get into it and stay with it until this whole, well, I can't say whole, but a great magnificent structure begins to dawn. You know what Alice Bailey said? As the Tibetan was dictating to her, she would get other glimpses that, you know, he was not putting in words. She would get glimpses of things that were just fantastic, and she couldn't really understand them. But they were what was behind what he was talking about. So we have to trust that our intuition will spring into action. once we cultivate the antikarana and the abstract mind, not the psychic hunch, but the real intuition that gives the sense of the wholeness and the articulated wholeness. And we're just going to learn a lot more about the system in which we live and move and have our being. So let's be patient and let's persist and let's go life after life as necessary, and it will dawn upon us. Okay, other thoughts? Anybody? Am I missing anybody? I know it's a little daunting, you know, a little daunting. But still, we're going to inch our way through this section, which is okay. And the systemic, local cosmic, and more remote cosmic triangles will appear. Now, for instance, if I gave you a triangle, I think I've reviewed this once before, but I gave you a triangle which basically was Earth, Mars, and Venus. What would you make out of that? What might you say about the triangle Earth, Mars, Venus? Anybody want to hazard a guess? Because, you know, it's not as difficult as you might think, really. So maybe no one wants to do that. However, we might consider Earth to be the, in that relationship, the etheric physical body. Mars is always the physical, astral, or lower mental body, but it has a tremendous astral potency because it rules the unsubdued solar plexus. Now, the interesting thing is when you as a human being are working on regenerating your vehicles, you have to work first on the etheric physical in Rule 10 and clear the quartz of the debris which is there, so we get accurate, wholesome, etheric transmission. And of course, Venus represents, with its fifth ray soul, the factor of mind. But Venus can also be Camomanus. And Venus is, let's say, presently, in my view, the solar plexus center of our solar logos. So if I give you a triangle like this, Earth, Venus, Mercury, what might you say? Anybody want to get into that? Because we've taken a step upward, have we not? Mars is so, in a way, non-sacred, and Mars is causing a tremendous problem on our planet at the present moment, the backward drag. It does give courage, but it, you know, until we have what's called the internalization of war, which is a scorpionic thing, we're going to have the externalization of war, which is always a threat in an atomic age. So again, if I may say, etheric physical is the Earth. And in esoteric astrology around page 60, 61, it talks about how Earth represents in the chart the etheric body. Then Venus is now the astral body, but it's kind of a blend of Kama and Manus, just the way Sirius, in a very high cosmic sense, is a kind of Kama monastic source. Now, we all of us have had plenty to do with Kama Manus. That means when we feel, we can't help but think, and when we think, we can't help but feel. We have to separate those two things out. Okay? So Venus has to become pure, loving Kama, reflecting the love of the soul. And Mercury, of course, is the mind. I'm going to give you one more triangle. And this one, the Tibetan deals with in esoteric psychology around page 99. Saturn, Mars, the Earth. Does anybody remember about that one? Because it is a significant triangle. And if I could, what could I do here? I could point to something that's most interesting. All I have to do is find it. Ah, there it is. All right. So, there. I'm going to point to this green circle. When I give you the triangle, Saturn, Mars, and the Earth. Okay? Now that's kind of a little hint. So what would you want to say, if you want to say anything, about Saturn, Mars, and the Earth? Now someone could quickly go to Esoteric Psychology 2, page 99, and see what it is. You know, and then I would point to this blue circle, and I would say Uranus, Jupiter, Venus. And there's only certain planets left for the red circle. Neptune, Vulcan, Pluto. What am I talking about when I'm talking about Saturn, Mars, and the Earth? Anybody have any thought about that one? How do I remember the page numbers? I don't remember where I left this and that. Always getting lost with Neptune in the third house of my astrological chart. However, I do remember what's important to me. And page numbers are very important. I once had a discussion with a guy that was like myself in that respect. And I said, well, okay, look, you might want to consider page 99. And he says to me, oh, yeah, well, what about 142? I said, well, that's fine, but what about 367? And on we went, exchanging page numbers and the books in which they were found, and the whole the whole conversation was from our memory of page numbers. Well, you know how it is. When you study a thing a long time, the pages start popping out at you. Because you don't want to lose the reference. If you lose the reference, you know, especially in these days of the computer, you should be able to find the reference fast because it's a confirmation of what you want to say. And you're backed up and you're not just talking through your hat. So for that reason, page numbers become important. You know, I can... If you want to know about the three types,
I looked it up. I wasn't going to have you hang out there too much longer. So what it says on page 99 in EP2, the personality of this third ray life functions through the following planets: the mental body through Saturn, the astral body through Mars, and the physical body through the planet Earth. So I just had to do it.
And a little bit later, you know, it goes on with Uranus. It doesn't tell you what. It doesn't tell you it's a third ray entity. It's really a second ray entity with Uranus, Jupiter, and Venus. And then it doesn't give you anything on the first ray, you know. But thank you, Joe. Look, you know, remember, there are three types of second ray souls. Maybe seven even, but DK acknowledges three, and basically he says the Christ puts them all together in his own being. But there is the wisdom type of the Buddha. There is the pure love type of the Christ, and there is the ray of the detailed unity and meticulous entirety of the third type, of whom I would say Master DK is our best example. So one, he's conditioned by the third ray, probably monadically, the Christ by the second ray monadically, but then we cannot say, we know the sub-ray of the Buddha on the soul level is the first ray, but monadically he has the third ray, at least one of his monadic rays is the third ray. So, you know, it's what behind the scenes, what's behind the scenes that determines which sort of second ray orientation you will have. And I would say that if you're a pure love type, the incredible detail of Master DK may not appeal to you for too long. You may find a different way. And if you're for the austere wisdom of the first ray type. So, you know, the Buddha taught very simply. He knew a lot of things. He mastered a lot of things. But when you read what was taken down, transcribed about the Buddha's teaching, it is simplicity itself. So he was really on the first ray line when it came to that. Now here we are studying with Master DK, the ray of specialized detail and of detailed unity. The ray of beauty in relation, and basically the ray of the divine pattern. That's where you get this third type of second ray. Page 518. It's important to me. Important to me. Page 518 of Discipleship, Volume 2. So, you know, when something's important to you and it's like the breath of life itself, a piece of information can be like the breath of life itself under certain circumstances, you just remember it. That's it.
And Veronica had a comment. I don't know if she can use her mic.
Let's see, is it Veronique or Veronica?
And Veronica, I think.
Oh, and Veronica. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so there you can speak, Anne Veronica.
Hello, can you hear me?
Very well.
Okay, I was totally wrong. You asked the question and I was answering that question, but I was totally wrong. I was saying that this green circle was the third aspect of active intelligence of the monad or the solar logos. But I was wrong.
Well, okay, the present monad of the solar logos is speculated as being the fourth ray on its way to becoming the second ray. Or maybe it already is. Everybody's got two monadic rays as far as I can see. One of them pertains to the monadic plane and the other to the logoic plane once the monad is liberated. So within our monadic vehicle, we are any one of the seven rays. And within the liberated monad in the sea of fire, we are only one of the first three rays, one, two, or three. So basically, you've got a sevenfold choice there. And the first thing is the sevenfold choice, and then comes the threefold choice. So we do not have a third ray monad, but in the last solar system, the personality of our solar logos was very likely the third ray, just as it is confirmed by the Tibetan that in this solar system, not only does our solar logos have the second ray soul, which he keeps, but he has a second ray personality. Therefore, the inference is that in the next and first ray solar system, we're talking about the personality of the solar logos, and it will be on the first ray. The soul ray will remain the same, and the probability is that the second ray monad will be fully in expression in the next solar system. Now, remember that some of this is necessarily speculation based on hints that Master DK has given, or hints that pop out at you because you have been reading closely, okay? And that's okay. Let us speculate intelligently, and if we're incorrect somewhere along the line, we will be corrected, either by someone who knows or has a better reason, or by the Master himself. But that green is the third ray, no question about it. And when you're dealing with that being, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, the three expressions, the triangle that expresses what we might call the Holy Ghost, Holy Spirit, whatever, is Saturn, Mars, and the Earth. And all of them have a preponderance of third ray monads at this time. It's largely third ray monads that pass through that particular grouping of planets. That doesn't mean there can't be some others. There are others. There are first and second ray monads, you know, and from another point of view, all the seven rays. But the preponderance, especially here on Earth, are the third ray monads. And Saturn, well, Saturn has been very compassionate planet. You know the story that it made a bridge between the previous solar system and our solar system so that there could be an escape of the monads from that earlier solar system into the new opportunity of this solar system. Now, many, many things come up about whether chakras exist simultaneously or whether they appear one after another. And I would just say that a chakra, whether it's a globe, a chain, a scheme, etc., they exist simultaneously, but in different states of development. Like you couldn't live unless you had all your seven chakras working simultaneously, but they are of different stages of development. The lower develop sooner, and the higher unfold later, and I've shown you the map. And that map is simply this map. Notice that the earlier planets, which are chakras in our solar system, are all articulated, but the two highest chakras, Uranus and Neptune, are not articulated. They are generalized. So there's so much that's hidden in these diagrams that one has to study them carefully, and DK is not saying a whole lot. He's saying, okay, I've given it to you, now get in there and study and see what you find. Maybe later he will elaborate. Okay, so that's it about the rays of our solar logos, and at least as far as I do understand.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome, Anne, Veronica. Okay. All right. Anything else, friends, before we just have a little, like I say, Atuya's not, well, I think she might be here somewhere here. I don't know. She's far away and up at the Little Bear Meditation Center. We've got one of those. And we were really humble and we didn't call it the Great Bear Meditation Center. It's the Little Bear. And we've got a bunch of bears sitting out in the yard. So, up in that part of the Arctic, maybe there are some bears, you know? Okay. Let's have a little, just a little consideration of what we're looking at, the light. There's a great light that is trying to shine in the lower phenomenal worlds. Right now, The dark light of matter is pretty well concealing it under the sign Cancer. But when Vulcan does its work, then everything will shine forth in the lower worlds. And a greater and greater light demonstration will be operative as our universe progresses. Which number is our universe? There's no way to number any term in an infinite series, beginningless infinite series. So there's no ordinality to it. You just can't say this is the fifth, this is the tenth, etc. You can't do that. There's so many mysteries, and you know, the mystery of our identity and infinity is maybe the greatest mystery. But right here, practically in the world of Mahamaya, we have the light, and we have the golden triangle coming down with the higher mind being the baseline, and these higher energies coming into the crown center with the help of Master DK and the Angel of the Presence. Now, one day we will all climb the mountain, you know. There are various mountains of various heights, and they keep on getting taller and taller. So he tells us, when you climb the mountain of the third initiation, there on the top you see a fantastic vision of the passage of the energies. Let's see if I can find that for you. It's so encouraging. I will find it. It's my hope. Be an esoteric psychology naturally in the Capricorn chapter, and I'll just check off esoteric astrology and I'll use that word and hope that it's correct, and maybe it's not correct, so I'll try another word. So, here it is, and it should be bigger so you can see. And always remember this little section, because it shows you what lies ahead for all of us when it comes to real energy. And I'm going to put it here. So just meditate on this for a minute. It has been occultly said, we're talking about invisible powers, normally invisible, normally interlocking forces of the constellations and the rays and the planets, all of that. It has been occultly said that a vision of these powers, with their many weaving lines, seen as rivers and streams of light, is given to the initiate from the mountaintop of Capricorn. once that summit has been reached. It is at the Transfiguration Initiation that this vision of rivers and streams of light appears before the eyes of the astounded disciple. So all the things we're talking about mentally, vaguely, when we reach that point, under the Capricornian influence, it will be an astonishing experience. He says all the great experiences upon the various mountaintops as related in the Bible have all to do with Capricorn. And we have the difference between Saturn with Moses, the lawgiver, and Venus, the Christ, the Sermon on the Mount, the Transfiguration before the three disciples who prostrated themselves. All of this lies ahead, but we have to take the solar system, the local cosmos, and the more distant cosmos seriously, and realize the relevance of the interplay which occurs in these various spheres. Now, naturally, as a master of the wisdom, we can better do that. And we're on our way, and many initiates of the fifth degree will be needed. We're told, you know, we look at it as such a achievement, than it is. But what we'll discover is it's just the very ground floor. The very ground floor. Of these fantastic relationships, these rivers and streams of light, which are not really remote from us at all. They do affect our solar system, our planet, our lives. Okay, friends, keep studying, keep meditating, keep applying, and we're on the morning schedule. We have two more days of the evening schedule. Tomorrow night we'll be reading from The Destiny of the Nations, wonderful book, written maybe along the first ray line, and we'll be talking about our relation to the soul of our nations. It's very important. And then the attracting financial resources for hierarchical purposes, that comes on Sunday. That's the evening schedule. And then next Wednesday, where I hope not to be AWOL, is the 31st.
And later today, Dissipation of Glamour.
Oh, I almost forgot.
Please don't forget.
Yeah, Dissipation of Glamour. Yeah, we'll do that at 5 p.m. tonight. We'll be reading from The Glamour World Problem. And, you know, it's very good to read from these books. Nobody says it like the Tibetan, and we have to chew it. You know, we have to absorb it so that it really means something to us. So I just want to thank you for your participation. And hope to see you tonight for the continuing work on individual glamours. We're just about at that point where we're about again to look at what are the glamours for the first ray person, the second ray, the third ray, so forth. It's very interesting. And of course, as far as glamours go, their name is Legion, meaning that there's ever so many more glamours than we can possibly name, and that's what the Tibetan did for people. He would get in there, and sometimes the glamours were not at all usual, and he would find a way to name them, to make it clearer before the individuals. So we'll do that. We'll do that webinar, another webinar tonight. Tomorrow, the broadcast in the evening, and Sunday, the broadcast in the evening. I'll have to check and see if there's other things going, but at least as far as we're concerned, those two broadcasts are coming up. Okay, anything else, Joe, that I have forgotten in my impending dementia here? Hey.
And no, I think you're doing great. Yeah. And then Ishtar did ask where the link is for the Glamour webinars. Ishtar, I'll send that to you.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much. Hey, I read that if you eat food that's too spicy, you will get dementia. I don't believe it, and I'm going to refuse to believe it until it begins to show obvious signs. So enjoy yourselves, everybody, and we'll see you tonight, or at least tonight, GMT. And thank you for being here. I'll get this converted as soon as possible. And look, let your friends know these discussions do exist, and they're most welcome to come aboard and, participate in what we're doing. So just pass it on. We've got to do that, and we've got to find the people who are at that transition point where they can work from their present life philosophy into what the Ageless Wisdom offers. And there are a lot of people at that stage, and maybe we know some, and maybe we can help. Okay. We'll see you before long, and take care, everybody. Lots of love, many blessings from Tuya and me and all those who helped to bring you these webinars and broadcasts. Talk to you.